Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Justice is Served, we talk an update in the Aaron Hernandez trial, a federal ruling in Texas, and the legal effect of Trump's policies on you. Stay tuned for more.
You are tuned into Black Hollywood Lives. Justice is Served.
Welcome, Justice is Served fans. We are a team of attorneys. My name is Shaka Smith. You can find me at Shaka Strong on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. I'm joined here by Yemi Abayemi.
Hi, Yemi Abayemi. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Yemiams.
Dominique Price, who you can find me on Twitter and Instagram, and that's it. Okay, at Dominique_ESQ.
So, yeah, we are a team of talking attorneys, and we're just here to go down a couple of today's pertinent rulings and legal cases and just give our opinion. So, we'll start off with the Aaron Hernandez case. We've been kind of following that for a while, and we had a little update with the witness. What do you guys think? Kind of give us a little rundown.
It actually made me wonder, did Aaron Hernandez pay somebody to say this? So basically what happened is that this individual, I can't remember his name, said that he was at the nightclub the night of the shooting and was with Aaron Hernandez essentially the whole time, because yeah. Aaron Hernandez was only in the club for 9 or 10 minutes, and this guy says that he was talking to Aaron Hernandez for about 7 to 10 minutes. No one ever spilled a drink on him. No one stepped on his feet. He was nice and polite
and that
and
was the
kind.
Primary reason they're
Where
saying
was
he retaliated.
Years ago?
And they're saying the primary reason he retaliated was because of that drink that was spilled on him, mm-hmm. and this guy's saying it didn't happen.
There was no drink, and I was with him the whole time, and he was comfortable and fine, so... And there's an actual picture of the two of them. This is great for Aaron Hernandez. But then it made me think, you know, did he pay someone to do that?
Well, the fact that he had a picture, I was like, okay, well, we do know that he was there. Mm-hmm. We'll give them that. Now, if he's covering up the whole drink thing, it's a nightclub. Did he go to the bathroom? Did he not see the drink? Like, there's so many other things that can go into what potentially happened at this club. So I don't think we should, you know, start celebrating just yet, or at least Aaron shouldn't.
Yeah, but it does bode pretty well for him. This guy is what, a doctor? He had some like good credentials.
He's a PhD student.
Yeah, and, he sounds really great.
And I guess has nothing, you know, no dog in the fight.
Yeah,
well, unless.
But we're looking at different witness testimony, and the other witness that said it happened, you know, has got a criminal record and said he's got a bone to pick with Aaron Hernandez. So,
well, and then when you look at the two witnesses, you have to say, like, I'm going to believe, you know, just off of resume alone, I'm going to listen to this guy that's the PhD student over the, you know, criminal.
And that's something for the jury to weigh. You know, they're going to get evidence, witness testimony from both, and they can decide who they think is more credible. And odds are, given that given that Alex Bradley has admitted to selling drugs and apparently being Aaron Hernandez's drug dealer.
And an enemy of Aaron Hernandez.
They might be more likely to then believe this PhD.
Yeah, I mean,
does this change the case?
I think it totally changes the case. If I put myself in a juror's position and I hear both of these testimonies, it sounds like the guy who's the alleged criminal had more of a bone to pick and more of a reason to lie, whereas the PhD student doesn't, like you said before, doesn't have a bone in this fight. Like, why lie unless the prosecution can prove that he has some type of material gain?
And we have that one, I believe he had the text messages earlier that he had deleted about, if I withdraw my testimony, can I get me for perjury? So he's got a lot of reliability issues as a witness.
I wouldn't believe him.
Yeah. So this might get Aaron Hernandez off for this, so we'll see.
But at
this
the end one. Of the day, yeah, right, yeah, but yeah. at the end of the day, he's still in prison for life, so it's kind of a moot point.
Well, I mean, I think they can probably go back and look at that case and hopefully or not, I don't know, find errors with that case if he didn't in fact do it, but
we'll see.
Fine errors in this case that suggests that he didn't kill
I'm saying right now they can't even like really focus on appealing that case right now because they got to fight this one. So then once they get this one off the books, then they can go back and focus on that one.
One thing at a time.
Yeah, one murder at a time.
Right.
Moving on, we had a ruling with some federal judges in Texas that found that they had gerrymandered according to racial lines. And, you know, gerrymandering is where they make these congressional districts, and they can do so in a way as to partition it so that one favors a particular candidate or party. What did you guys think of this development here?
I thought it was good that they... I mean, I think it's important that, courts call out instances where congressional boundaries or any sorts of boundary lines are being drawn solely based on race or solely to dilute the voting power of a racial minority, which is what they found mm-hmm. here. They found that there were a lot of discussions in making these congressional maps that involved conversations about undocumented immigrants and Spanish-speaking individuals, and that was kind of the backdrop of them making these, drawing these lines. And, you know, the Supreme Court has said, as you mentioned, that if you're drawing partisan line, drawing these maps along partisan lines, we can tolerate that, but we can't do so around racial lines. That's not something that we can have. So I'm glad that there's someone who is looking into that and making sure these minorities have their voice heard.
I agree 1,000%, but what my issue is that these are always decided after a major election or after the decision has been made. There's really no recourse to go backwards, only to know this for the future. Yeah. And that's the thing that I always have a problem with. Well, and, I mean, I don't know that it would have made that big of a difference.
The only thing you get, it probably would have made a huge difference, but the only thing you can really do is hold those elected officials accountable, I guess, the ones that made the decision. Because it looks like they did this, the GOP approved this plan in 2011, mm-hmm. and that was after in 2010, like, statistics came in and said there was this huge minority explosion, and then all of a sudden the talk turned to voter ID laws, mm-hmm. Things of that nature. And I guess we'll talk a little bit about this with Trump, but it looks like they're no longer going to defend, the DOJ had gone in and said that the voter ID laws seem to be running counter to the Constitution, essentially, because of the minority focus. And that looks like the Trump team has withdrawn that focus by the DOJ.
I thought they had that they were still looking at things along the whether the maps were drawn in an unconstitutional manner, but that the voter ID laws were not something that they had necessarily said whether they were going to review or not.
Oh, no. Well, the DOJ had stepped in and joined the team that said we're going to support that these laws are unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And the Trump team now, you know, reversed the DOJ and said to pull back. And I believe they actually, well, that's for the, and the consent decrees as well is something we'll talk about with Sessions. But interesting case with the gerrymandering, so hopefully they're going to do something different. And, you know, we got 2018 coming up, so we really hope there's some sort of change there.
We can only hope.
So now we have judges ruled against Trump and his right to free speech. You want to tell us about that one?
So there was a rally, I believe, in Louisville, Kentucky, yes. where and it was made the news. A number of mm-hmm. Trump protesters had attended a Trump rally and ultimately were kicked out of the protest. But not only were they kicked out, but they were kind of ferried out by the Trump Trump supporters, pushed out violently, and you know Trump kind of sang along and said, yeah, get him out of here. Get him out of here.
Yeah.
And so these plaintiffs are saying that Donald Trump is accountable for what they experienced.
Yeah,
so,
inciting violence.
So some of the claims in their complaint are for vicarious liability, because he should have had control over the environment in his rally, incitement to riot, and negligence. And so we'll see. They've kind of past the first stage, because they filed a motion to dismiss, and they've survived the negligence claims and the incitement to riot claims survived the vicarious liability claim did not.
Yeah, we seem to have sometimes we talk about free speech like it's an absolute right, you know.
No.
But there are limits, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're encouraging someone to be violent, then you're not going to be protected. In this case, it's a question. There is a question. I mean, not even necessarily just along the free speech grounds, but in terms of the incitement to riot grounds. I mean, did he, you know, have the intent to provoke these Trump supporters to have them put, you know, to get violent? Is it enough to say get him out of here? Is that enough to say, oh, you are provoking violence?
Right.
And their part was he knew that there were KKK members in the mm-hmm. crowd, and that I guess there was a prominent white nationalist in the crowd as well, and so that he should have known that would have caused. So it's not necessarily that he, you know, had to specifically know, but that he should have known as well.
I think they're hoping that the fact that there's video footage of him actually pointing them out is going to be enough.
Yeah.
For an incitement to
riot? I don't think so, though.
But it depends if you know how caustic the environment is.
Right. And so I think that's something that you're not going to be able to tell from the video. You'd have to prove that he knew the individual KKK members were actually in the crowd. And I don't know if they have the evidence to be able to do so. Feel like we've... I mean, you know when the leader of the KKK is in your midst, in my mind.
Well, you know, there were a couple incidents like this on the trail. Yeah. So I think depending on when this happened, had there been those before, that'll certainly help their case to say that he should have known that was the environment. So I think it'll depend on when there was other incidents of violence at the rallies.
That I didn't read from the article, at what point did this happen in the...
That whole scheme of things.
The scheme of things. But we do have to be mindful that this wasn't the first rally of his where individuals were beaten up or chastised all the way out of the door. So I think that there's good proof to show that his rallies were, you know... violent.
So if this had happened, but if those had happened before this,
I still don't know if
this,
you can really say that it's his fault.
Yeah. I don't even know that you can say, because remember the vicarious liability.
Yeah. It's already been thrown out. Yeah.
So really, we're just left with the negligence claim. Okay, maybe you didn't provide adequate security, or you're left with the incitement to riot claim. But I don't know that the language get them out of here
is enough
to say that you wanted them to act violently. Well, and keep in mind that again, for a motion to dismiss claim, the standard is really low. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is state a claim that, if true, could lead to liability. And all the facts are kind of taken in favor of the plaintiff. So it's a very, very low bar to even meet that standard.
I personally think that they have a really good shot of passing through on this case as far as the negligence came. Because from the clips that I could see, there were actual other protesters pulling the people out as opposed to his security team. And he watched them as they do it. He didn't say, hey, let me get security to handle that. That's not your job, or we got this taken care of.
Which also kind of bolsters the incitement to violence claim, too, though.
So I do think, if anything, the negligence claim has a higher chance of being successful.
Yeah, but I think that incitement to violence, especially if he had said get out before in other rallies and the protesters were abused, then he already kind of knows that that's the kind of language that gets you abuse in a rally.
Well, one of the things that the judge mentioned was that he used an imperative, a directive, an order, get him out of here, kind of telling them, it's your job to get these guys out.
Exactly,
so, like, you know,
rather than
out.
Security or everyone wait, have security. Yeah, so... I don't know. I think there's a high likelihood. Low likelihood, do you think?
I think the chances are a little bit slim. But I think the next piece, you know, even in terms of damages, the things that they are claiming are, I can't sleep well. I have pain. I have anxiety. So I don't know how much, even if they kind of do move forward and are successful, I don't know what damages would be in the first place.
Well, of course, if they're experiencing that, they probably can't work. And then now they're going to need... Yeah, so that's the legal language for money.
Right.
Yeah, that's the legal language for money. So let's move on now to Trump undoing Obama's work, which, to me, I don't know, it just almost seems that the administration hasn't necessarily had a forward vision so much as a vision of undoing a lot of Obama's work. But let's talk about what those legal effects have been about undoing that work. And we kind of start off with climate change. What do you guys think about this? So he's ordered a review of the Clean Power Plan, and he lifted the 14-month halt, the 3-year halt that we had on coal leases on federal lands. So what did you guys think about the area of climate change?
I feel like we all have to live on this earth, and we all hope that it's there for ourselves, our children. So I'm a little bit nervous about what this means for just the environment. And of course, we know the EPA, I think he intends to shut it down altogether.
Yeah.
So I guess this is just one
step closer.
Mirroring that.
Yeah, I think...
One thing I can say about Trump, that although I have my strong disdain for him, he has been very committed to what he said on the trail.
Yeah.
He's been more actionable in his first few months on exactly the points that he made in his campaign. And to that, I have to be, you know, I have to give him his kudos and his respects on that, because I feel like there have been so many presidents that have come before him that not only don't follow through, but it's year 3.5 when you see some real momentum kick up and you're just like, what have you been doing? I'm confused.
There's plenty of momentum here.
He has way too much momentum, which is like kind of scary, but it's like at the same time, it's kind of And interesting.
He also got rid of he also got rid of the policy where they're supposed to take the social cost of carbon emissions when they look into approving different plans. And so that to me is interesting.
I thought this was very self-serving. Because we know that for his industry, I feel like because we know that he has a lot of investments, I just kind of felt like, are we not all going to call bullshit on this?
Yeah. But and the administration,
guess nobody agreed.
And the previous administration had been cracking down on methane emissions from oil and gas wells, and that's no longer something that we do.
Yes.
So some of the environmental stuff, but that's the impact of it. But I didn't. It's curious to me as to why you would do that, but you know.
It reminds me of like a first season episode of Scandal when their biggest donor was a oil tycoon, and he would come in and just like have his way in the White House because he had given so much money, and it kind of just makes you want to wonder like, who's really paying your pocket for you to be so hard just on environmental stuff? So.
And then, again, we just had the big ruling or the big legislation that passed that he signed about the internet. There was a lot of uproar about this, and basically letting internet providers provide information to third parties. So, you know, Obama administration had said, we don't want that to happen, and so this is going to be law. And this is I think it was about a few months away from going into effect or very soon. But now they've removed that regulation. What do you guys think of this? And do you buy that it's supposed to, like, Now innovation will no longer be stifled and there'll be more jobs as a result?
That's bullshit. I don't see the link to the internet providers being able to sell my information to there being more jobs. Like, I need somebody to draw that on a map and show me how those link together. I think it was interesting because the argument that I read was that they felt like they were holding the internet providers to a higher standard than, say, for example, Google.
It's like you're choosing winners and losers.
Right. And they didn't feel like that was fair. And from that argument, I kind of understood a little bit more where they were trying to come from, because that is a big profit income for companies like Google and Yahoo. And so it's like, well, why can't these individuals profit from that as well? Had a whole entire brain. What's happening here? And so from that argument, I was like, okay, that makes sense. But my issue is that I don't necessarily agree with the Googles and the Facebooks doing it either.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's like it's like you're basically saying, hey, we want to even the playing field for you, but that playing field isn't fair on consumers.
It makes corporate sense. You know, Chelsea would say they're treating corporations like people.
Yes. Oh, that would ruffle her feathers.
And then now we go to abortion. So with abortion, they have they've signed into law, I guess, states can withhold federal family planning funds from Planned Parenthood affiliates and anyone that provides abortions or those services. And we also got rid of the Mexico rule. Can you tell me about the Mexico rule?
So with the Mexico rule, that was a rule, and that was a rule that basically bans providers of kind of like almost like Planned Parenthood services, women's health services, those that provide either abortions or those who even just provide advice about abortions. They're saying that the federal government will not fund these organizations, even if they provide a variety of women's health services. The fact that Trump has kind of reversed Obama's position on the Mexico, what is it called, the Mexico rule. Is not unusual. Each president, going back at least, you know, 4 or 5, has reversed it upon coming into office. So it's one that actually acts as a volleyball regularly. So this is not a surprise.
Yeah, though I didn't necessarily agree with it, that was the one thing I was like, oh, that's sort of presidential, because it actually follows some sort of strictures of the past. But so I didn't really take it to task too much for that.
It's interesting to me when you really kind of look at some of our previous presidents. I think we spend as a country so much time undoing what another has done instead of like trying to figure out a way to kind of like cohesively
examining the policy to see if it
it even worked. We're just upset that the other guy did it.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, is that really effective governing?
Yeah, that's the problem, I think, is that, and even the Mexico rule, because I've never even heard of it being covered.
No.
You know? I think people covered it because it kind of made Trump look bad.
Yeah.
You know? So to some degree, you got to have a little bit of fairness. But then he's, you know, done some work with the Keystone and the Dakota Access Pipelines. With Keystone, you want to tell us about that? Just the approval process. So, like, he went ahead and he approved the Keystone Pipeline that had been...
Right. And so a lot of people are saying that they had an issue with it because, as we've mentioned on the show before, Trump actually used to have interest in Keystone. But he put it into a trust before coming into his presidency, but he has now since approved their work in moving to another location. And so right now, the new location, which I can't remember exactly where it is on the line, but they are now in a tizzy to try and block it as well.
Yeah, so, that just, it just kind of was a, it showed a competing balance between, I guess, the Obama administration thought it would not advance our fuel independence enough to be reliable as a partner in climate change and like a global partner in the climate. And so, but Trump has said pro industry. And I think that's the reason I need to approve the Dakota Access Pipeline. You want to tell us a little bit about that and that little kerfuffle?
we know that there was a lot of kind of uproar about this access pipeline because a lot of Native American communities were saying that the routes that were going to be used for these pipelines will damage their access to, I guess, water and even just some cultural sites as well. And so there was a lot of uproar about that. And, you know, under the Obama administration, they were saying that there are alternative routes that you guys can take for this. So let's explore that. But Donald Trump, in anti-Obama fashion, says, "Hey, let's move ahead."
And they've started even drilling under one of the lakes that was at issue.
It's under the lake, but it's still a little bit more. They tried to kind of come to a happy median by diverting the route a little bit, but it's still very close to the original path.
Yeah. So, you know, take it for what it is, just kind of ticking down, you know, what Trump has done in these last few days. And then fuel efficiency, which kind of surprised me, because I don't know why you would, like, try to limit fuel efficiency standards. But when I first heard this story...
Apparently it's, like, an issue with car manufacturers.
Yeah, but when I first heard this story, though...
He's trying to keep his promises to Michigan.
Yes. Yeah, of course.
Those Rust Belt states that got him elected in the first place.
Yeah, but when I first heard the story, I heard it as he's kind of wiping out these new regulations that were going to come up. But what actually happened was it looks like there's supposed to be a midterm reevaluation, and then the Obama administration sped that up because they wanted to make sure it wasn't reevaluated in the negative. So he just reinstituted the reevaluation. So hopefully he sticks to the better fuel standard for, 2022 to 2025?
I feel like that shouldn't be controversial, maintaining high fuel efficiency standards.
You would think that this wouldn't be an issue.
But if it's forcing people to innovate too quickly, then maybe it's a high cost. It's really all for industry, because if the industry can't do it, then, or they can do it, but they know they want to find the cheapest way. Exactly, the cheapest way, too. And then,
this is a very pro-corporation
which is what we understood.
Yeah, coming in,
we knew it was going to be a pro-business administration.
But it's like at the expense
and potentially
of,
pro, yeah, right.
Of the people. Oh, yeah. at least how I see it. And then we withdrew from the TPP.
The benefits of the corporation will extend to the people.
And then I guess the last big thing was on finance, which, you know, kind of got us into that whole big Great Recession thing before. So he wants to repeal Dodd-Frank, which was put in place to avoid the big banks from doing what they did before and getting us into a sort of financial quandary. And then something else you wanted to do with finance. Do you remember?
Right. So he wanted to the Obama administration that instituted a fiduciary rule, which basically said those financial advisors that are providing retirement advice to individuals, you can't steer them towards high commission to accounts that lead towards high commissions for you, very high risk investments that might negatively impact these retirees.
And that's just the result. The whole thing says you just have to put them first.
Right. Basically, the rule is just you need to put their best interest first.
That's the rule.
Which you would think you would be paying for in the first place.
Yeah. And they're like the most vulnerable. These are people like retirees. This is their last bit of money, you know?
Yeah. So they're walking that back. And even the argument that the banks were saying was, we cannot provide... We're limiting the options that we can then provide towards these retirees. But I don't think that putting their best interests first necessarily has to be mutually exclusive with providing them with good options.
Yeah, so that to me was stunning. But if you are a retiree and you have limited options, you might want to get something from Blue Apron.
I think a retiree could do really, really well with Blue Apron. Like, they wouldn't have to go to the grocery store. It's only $10 a meal. Like, they still like to cook. Like, I think this would be, maybe this is what you guys should get your grandparents for Mother's and Father's Day. Like, everyone should just go ahead now and buy them a Blue Apron subscription.
And not even retirees, but you guys tried Blue Apron.
I love Blue Apron. Blue Apron, it's great. You get new meals every week. All the ingredients. You don't have to go to the grocery store. You just got to chop them up, prepare them, and you're ready to go with a different meal every week, which is great for me because I tend to cook once a week, and I eat the same thing for, 5 or 6 days, but you can get tired of that. Whereas with Blue Apron, you're literally eating a new meal every day, something, and you're learning these new recipes that you can actually keep.
Yeah, I mean, just hear what they have as the upcoming meals. They have spinach and fresh mozzarella pizza. Yum. Like, who doesn't want pizza? Sweet and sour salmon with bok choy. Bok choy is probably my favorite vegetable. Parmesan crusted chicken. I'm hungry just thinking about it. Like, what time are we done?
I know, right?
I'm ready to order. So if you guys are feeling as hungry as I am after listening to some of the meals for this week, you guys should go to blueapron.com/justice so that you can get 3 free meals.
Oh, it's like Oprah's. You get a meal. You get a meal. You get a meal.
So definitely go and check that out, you guys, because they use some of the best quality products
From local farmers.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. It's like the number one fresh ingredient recipe delivery service in the country.
Wow. Well, thank you, Blue Apron. Love the support you guys provide. And then we have just a few more, just real quickly, got a few more minutes here. Sessions now, the DOJ. So, a lot of people were wondering, people kind of railed against Sessions. What are the effects of that? And so we got one of our first big ones now, this consent decree memo. Do you want to talk to us about the memo?
Well, so Jeff Sessions has been interviewed on multiple occasions. Even when he was going through the confirmation process, he was asked questions about how he feels about these consent decrees that police departments are entering into. And he made no mistake about it. He wasn't bashful about it, but he says, I don't know that I see their value. I don't even know that the research that goes into researching departments like Ferguson and Chicago, I don't even know that they're scientifically based or that they provide a lot of information. And he says, we really don't want to hamper police departments and get in the way of protecting the public safety. So let's probably investigate this and walk it back so that we can make sure that our police departments have kind of can use the full panoply of their resources to encourage public safety. And he doesn't really take much of the community concerns into account, especially those communities where, it has been shown that these police departments are demonstrating patterns of racial discrimination or excessive use of force. He seems to brush that aside, all in support of just maintaining freedom and broad leeway for these police departments.
So he's ordered this review of this consent decrees to see if they advance public safety or do they, really inhibit police departments from hiring people and doing their job.
Saving face.
Like, what do you mean by saving face?
Because he repeatedly said that this was something that he wasn't going to put a lot of energy into, to now saying that he will.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, what side of, like, the coin are you going to be in on the issue?
Well, it seems like he's willing to put energy into it to the extent that we are removing burdens on police departments. Because Trump has been very, very clear about his desire to kind of execute a law and order policy. And so this is actually consistent with what Trump has been saying. And it almost seems like a method for them to effectuate those Trump claims. And he said in it, as well, you know, we're going to be looking at whether these policies are in line with the president's edicts.
Yeah.
And so in terms of law and order being one of them, rolling back his consent decrees is in furtherance.
What I thought was interesting was one of his major concerns was how the police department would be viewed because of just a few bad apples that people might be distrustful. You know, I mean, when these studies found systemic racism.
Deficiencies in training, poor policies, lack of accountability.
And a lot of the consent decrees actually had whole sections devoted to community trust, so to build trust with the community. So how would he think that was taking away from
him? I don't think he actually read these.
He said I've skimmed them.
And so I guess they were supposed to have one in Maryland, because federal judges review these consent decrees to make sure their cities are complying with them. And they're supposed to have a hearing on Monday, but the federal government asked them to postpone it, and then in came this memo. So it didn't really bode well for the consent decrees already in place even, much less the ones that were probably going to go forward.
Rahm Emanuel did say that, at least speaking for the city of Chicago, he said that they do intend to follow through and pay attention to some of the recommendations and do what they can on their end, but they can't speak for the government.
And now there may be no federal oversight of it. And then we had another, I guess, a positive development in response to some of what's going on, at least positive from my viewpoint. Don't know who's out there listening.
And don't alienate
some
of our potential listeners.
So in California, we recently passed a bill kind of designating us as a sanctuary city. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, so we've just passed this Senate Bill 54, which bars law enforcement agencies from using California resources, local resources, state resources, to help immigration efforts, which are a federal matter.
Yeah.
And so basically what folks, officials here are saying is that we need to be using our resources efficiently, and we can't be going up against, law-abiding immigrants and utilizing our resources to do the federal government's job on immigration. And therefore, we're not going to be providing transfers when the federal government requests transfers of these undocumented individuals. We're not going to respond to requests for release dates, because sometimes the federal government will ask,
so they can pick them up to deport.
Exactly. Yeah. And so they're saying, we're not going to do that. But there are some exceptions. They will provide assistance to the extent that the undocumented immigrant is has been convicted of a violent felony. Yeah. In those cases, they're saying, okay, well, we can cooperate.
So we're talking about lower tier crimes.
Right, but we do need to manage our finite resources.
What do you think of this?
I'm sorry, I had to reread something about Sessions, because I was like, I want to make sure that I read the article correctly. So to make sure that we're all on the same page, during his confirmation, he said that he was not going to continue with the
consent decrees.
Thank you. But in his memorandum that has come out as of Monday, he has asked the DOJ to review them.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Now, my brain was not catching it. I was like,
no problem.
We're not on the same page. We are. I'm sorry, guys.
But yeah, so with the sanctuary cities, though, so do you agree with this legislation that California's put forth? They're not going to coordinate.
I don't necessarily all the way disagree. I just want to see. I just feel like there should be more review processes done prior to putting something in place. Like, I want more data. And I don't feel like in this particular case it was presented.
To the extent, again, and to the extent that you do have a finite amount of resources, I think it makes sense to dedicate your law enforcement resources to those who are committing crimes and acting as a detriment to public safety.
Yeah.
To the extent that you have an individual who's working, paying taxes or, you know, and not doing anything to harm your community. I can understand why you wouldn't want to devote resources to that when there is a federal government, that has that responsibility.
Because typically I would say, you want to coordinate with the federal government.
Right.
And it seems kind of odd and out of step. But
Didn't make sense to me. Like, I wanted to understand why they were taking this route.
Well, I know. I think ultimately they're doing it because they don't want families broken up. And because the federal government, at least now, seems to be doing these deportations in a way that doesn't really consider the family and what's happening.
Right.
If you're a dreamer and you were brought here before, you have no idea, then deporting you to another country. And so I think we just had a dreamer that was picked up maybe like 2 weeks ago or so.
Right.
So I think they're doing it for the sake of like human capital, appreciation of human life.
I didn't realize this, but apparently a quarter of the undocumented immigration population in the U.S. is here in California.
Yeah, so it is it is a huge burden.
Yeah, and so so between being having the burden, but I think also wanting to ensure that communities felt safe, because I think that's more of an upheaval in the community if you're taking away people that are earning money and sending them away, and now you might have more crime, or I think it causes more of a disruption than at least what's been the status quo so far. But
what I did think was interesting was that they also introduced another bill, Senate Bill 6, where they put aside money, $12 million, in a legal defense fund for those immigrants that were facing deportation. Yeah.
That I thought was amazing.
Yeah.
I thought that was good, but then it made me wonder, well, what other types of legal defense funds can we put together for people who need them, not to kind of go astray, but,
That's funny. My brain didn't even go there. I was just happy that they were stepping up to provide some kind of help.
No, I think that's great, but I would like to see that then for other communities. We know the impact that kind of being kind of in a lower economic socioeconomic status can have if you are engaged in the criminal system but don't have enough money for bail or an attorney, the consequences are going to hurt you much
far
disproportionately
worse,
to someone who actually does money. So can we put together a legal defense fund for people who don't have a ton of money? Are there other things? So I thought that was interesting that they specifically put together that fund for those immigrants at risk of deportation. But I would like to see what else can we do.
I think they fuel a lot of industry here. And you don't feel safe, then corporations hurt as a result as well. So I think it hurts corporations, families, businesses, jobs. So.
Right. In addition, you want undocumented workers to also cooperate with law enforcement.
Yeah,
so you don't want to alienate themselves. That actually puts a city more at risk if you cannot rely on a significant portion of your population to help you with law enforcement matters. So you do need to maintain a relationship, and that's a delicate balance, rather than kind of just putting down the hammer and saying, all of you guys, no sanctuary for you.
Yep. Well, that is our Trump policy wrap-up for the day. Thank you guys for joining us. My name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
Hi, I'm Yemi Abayemi. It was great being with you guys. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at AYemYems.
And you guys can find me, Dominique Price, at DominiqueP_ESQ.
See you guys later.
Executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us, info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay. Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.